We certainly have an unspoken understanding.
But a lot of things unsaid as well.
Hi, this is Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're floating down the endless river with Redbeard.
Hi, this is David Gilmour, and I'm here with Redbeard, helping him to introduce you all to our new album, The Endless River.
The notice was innocuous enough. A single tweet among the literally millions sent that day, washed up on the shore like some electronic message in a bottle. Hi, I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net. The tweet was from London-based writer and lyricist Polly Sampson, who wrote the bulk of the words on Pink Floyd's last album, The Division Bell, some 20 years ago. The tweet announced, rather excitedly, that there would be, in autumn 2014, a new Pink Floyd album of unreleased recordings entitled The Endless River. Well, the Twitterverse, a common form of instant worldwide communication which didn't even exist when Pink Floyd last released a new album, the Twitterverse went totally ballistic. Against all odds, and in spite of public assertions by at least one band member to the contrary, it was confirmed Pink Floyd fans in the millions worldwide would get another chance to explore new uncharted musical territory along the endless river with guitarist, vocalist, composer David Gilmour, Pink Floyd co-founder and percussionist Nick Mason, and miraculously, the late Pink Floyd keyboardist Rick Wright. The backwaters run deep and the musical tributaries many, which feed into the saga of the endless river. To navigate it all, joining me first is David Gilmour in the studio aboard Astoria, the floating recording workshop on the River Thames, affectionately known as The Boat. Who do we have to thank for the fact that the endless river exists?
Well, gosh, I suppose in a big way, it's the fans who have been asking for all these years about this sort of semi-legendary thing they've heard of called the Big Spliff, which is has very, very little to do with the final thing that came out, but they heard about it, which is a little presentation of stuff left over from the Division Bell sessions that Andy, our engineer, put together for us to have a listen to, which we then forgot about, but somehow it got out that it existed. I think even a bootleg of it may have surfaced at some point. Then, I suppose, added to that the fact that Rick had died, it seemed like a good moment to revisit all that music and consider whether or not we could put something valuable and hopefully magical together out of all that music.
Speaking to motivation, not to be contrary, but in 2006 and again in 2011, you, David, stated emphatically to me that, and this is a quote, "I'm out and I will stay out,"
yeah,
of Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Now, I've always known you to be a man of your word.
I lied.
What changed your mind? No.
Well, to be honest, I'm not considering going back in. I mean, I'm not going to do a tour, there'll be no dates. This just seemed like a little bit of unfinished business that I thought we should look at and possibly put out there for the benefit of all those people that have followed us for all these years.
at the intro to It's What We Do. What is it exactly that Rick Reich did with the venerable Hammond organ that announced undeniably that we are listening to Pink
Floyd? Well, that's the secret of the whole thing, isn't it? I mean, just the three of us playing together is a sound. It has its own sound. It's completely different to anyone else. It's hard to pinpoint why that is, why one's own sort of idiosyncrasies tie together in that particular way to create the music that we create.
Personally, I really didn't realize how fundamental Rick's sound was to Pink Floyd until he reappeared full stop on the Division Bell, because Rick's sound is as distinctive as your guitar sound is to Pink Floyd.
Rick's sound has always been very distinctive. His sense of timing, the notes he chooses, the sounds that he creates, they've always been sitting there being a vital, something that has possibly been undervalued by, you know, people over the years, maybe by us, even by us ourselves. But it's a vital part. I mean, everyone who's been a part of it has created a sum of sound that is Pink Floyd, and Rick's part is an enormous part of that. And Rick was never as pushy a person as Roger and myself were in these things, and so it was easier for him to be slightly overlooked, I guess.
Pink Floyd founding member, percussionist Nick Mason.
But I think that's partly what this album's about, and it's this very curious thing that we've spent years and years learning, which is that you can do something together that you cannot do separately, and you can't do it with other people either. You need those three specific or four specific or whatever it is. You need that one particular group of people to make something happen. And none of us really truly understand how it's done. I think that's the oddest thing about it. We now realize that it happens, but we can't explain it. You know, I've said before that I think this record, there's an element of a sort of homage and a recognition of Rick. And it's perhaps sort of making up for lack of recognition prior to this. And he is, you know, he's always perhaps been the unsung hero. That if you actually sort of, the tendency is to notice either the lyrics or the lead guitar or whatever. Yeah, our sound is very much geared to that keyboard playing those very often really sort of different chords, different sequences, and so on. And I think it's a really nice thing for this album in particular to be able to recognize that. You know, this material goes back 20 odd years, and it was constructed at the time we were working on Division Bell. And at the time, soon after we finished the record, we released it, and it was really half of what we'd intended to do. We were intending to do a double album, with half of it being songs and half of it being a sort of ambient series of sessions. And we ran out of time and maybe ran out of steam, and it got forgotten. And whenever mentioned, it was something that was in the vaults that really we could never see. We never saw a future for it. And even when Andy Jackson went and said, look, let me mess around with it, really, we still didn't really sort of envisage doing very much with it. And even after he'd started assembling it and we started listening to it, we still couldn't see it as as an album. We thought maybe there'd be some future in using it in some way. And it went on like that for a very long time. And in fact, during that intervening period, we did various other things. I mean, at one point we re-recorded the drums, and I think probably some other parts on Momentary Lapse of Reason. Again, with nothing specific in mind as to what we were going to do, to perhaps really explain it. Even 2 years ago, we really didn't have any real sense that this was going to be much more than something that maybe we could do something with, but not as an album. And the way that I realized that and put it into some sort of timeline was that, I think it was a couple of years ago, Phil Manzanera and I took what was then the beginnings of Endless River, or a distillation of something that was, had a working title, of the Big Spliff, and took it to the Wachowski siblings, who were making and still are making a film called Jupiter Ascending, and we actually thought there might be some future in using our material as the basis for a soundtrack for the film they were working on. And in fact, it came to nothing, but perhaps fortuitously, as things have turned out. But it was an interesting idea, but it did show at the time that we had not seen it as being capable of being developed into to what we now have.
So who do we have to thank for the fact that The Endless River is going to be available to Pink Floyd fans as a Pink Floyd album?
Well, I think if we're talking awards or anything like that, it's me. But otherwise, or if there's any money involved. On the other hand, I think first we should start with Andy Jackson, who's the engineer on Division Bell, because he was the one who really kicked off the idea of looking at it and seeing whether it could be reassembled or assembled into something. Certainly Phil Manzanera, who sort of came in after that, and Youth after that. And frankly, I think David and I were both sort of quite late in on really sensing where it could go. And because I have a very clear memory of going into David's studio and playing and not really knowing what I was going to do at all, just working on the basis that we were going to sort of listen and more or less play along with what had been done before and see if anything could be added. And it was that morning, I'd sort of spent the morning playing with and Andy recording it and so on, and David came in to hear what was going on, and the great moment was when he listened to it and then sort of reached over and picked up a guitar and started playing. And I think that was the point at which it moved into another gear.
unmistakable sound of Pink Floyd from the first new album in 20 years, entitled The Endless River. That's simply called Some. Coming next, David Gilmour and Nick Mason continue the saga of this most unconventional Pink Floyd project, literally two decades in the making. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net, setting sail from the headwaters of the Endless River.
Hi, this is Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're floating down the Endless River with Redbeard.
Hi, this is David Gilmour, and I'm here with Redbeard, helping him to introduce you all to our new album, The Endless River.
So at least from your perspective, when the idea of resurrecting these unreleased performances was actually considered seriously, what were the pros and what were the cons of releasing them as a Pink Floyd album?
I think we've always had a bit of a perfectionist streak, and what I think would have prevented us from doing this until now is the thought that we wouldn't have the control and be able to make it as perfect a thing as we would have done on previous occasions. As life goes on, I suppose I've relaxed a bit about that and consider that these things have their own value, not in the same way as making a Dark Side of the Moon or a Division Bell album, but there's lots of music on there. There's lots of me playing with Rick and with Nick, and rather than have those lost to eternity, it seemed fair enough now, sort of 20-odd years after the Division Bell, to revisit that and see what we could do with it.
Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason.
Well, the pros were that there were some great pieces of music there. There were things that would never be possible to recreate. There was Rick's original playing, some of which was absolutely terrific. The cons were that people might feel that it was, that it was secondhand material, and that we would have to think very carefully whether we felt that it really did, it was worthy, I suppose. And I think so far, with the reaction, and certainly from sort of my listening to what's there, we're allowed to do the music in whatever way, way, shape or form we think best. And then people are perfectly entitled to either buy it or not buy it as they see fit. It's sort of important sometimes to remember that one shouldn't ever get hidebound by some sort of sense of restriction of what is allowed or not.
Who, if anyone, played a role in advising you, being a sounding board, helping you possibly sort through the pluses and minuses on revisiting this and issuing a bona fide Pink Floyd album?
Well, it needed looking at, and I was kind of busy working on a solo project, which is still to surface. And so I asked Phil Manzanera to, if he would like to have a look at it. And he loved the idea. And he didn't listen to what was that big spliff tape that we had. But he went back to all the original pieces of recorded music from 1993 and jotted down his thoughts about every piece of music, and then came up with the idea of having the four separate pieces of music and put together the early sort of version of The Endless River.
You know, I always loved Roxy Music. I really felt that they were underrated, at least here in North America.
Mm.
How long have you had a friendship with Phil Manzanera?
My friendship goes back a long way. I, in fact, was his brother was a friend of mine. His bad brother was a friend of mine in Cambridge when I was a teenager. His brother once asked me if I'd have lunch with him and his kid brother to advise him how to get on in the rock and roll business. And so I'm to blame for all of it. Well, a lot of this stuff was never on massive 2-inch reels of proper tape. It was a lot of it was jamming that we had done, just the three of us initially, and then the second week with Guy at Britannia Row Studios in London. And it was just recorded to a DAT machine, so stereo DAT tapes, which means there's, you know, you're very limited into what you can do to them, because they are set You can't reduce the level of a keyboard or raise the level of a guitar. You're stuck with pretty much the way it is. So a lot of it was from that, and then a fair bit more was recorded on the normal old-fashioned tape.
In places, The Endless River swings more, it grooves more than any Pink Floyd album since possibly Wish You Were Here, maybe even The Jam in the Middle of Echoes or One of These Days. Why is that?
There was a lot of jamming together at the Britannia Row Studios and here on the boat later on, without any particular feeling that we were actually moving towards something specific. It was open, free-form jamming, just to try and get to know each other again after a long period not working together. That tends to lead to less deliberate forms of music than you, less planned pieces. And that could, I suppose, create open doors where you just do get to groove along together in a more relaxed way. Andy, our engineer, did a wonderful job of recording that stuff back in 93. There's new drums that we've recorded this time on one or two of the tracks, and the sound that he's been getting on them has been fabulous. And Nick's playing, I have to say, has been fabulous too. He's really, really nails it on all the stuff he's worked on. There's no deliberate attempt to make it sound that different to what we've done before, but that's just progress for you.
Let's talk about some of the specific songs on The Endless River. Tell me about Anacina, a song that you wrote. I find it to be very cinematic.
Yeah, that's a piece of piano music that I wrote, I can't remember when. I think it had been around a fair while before 1993, to be honest. I wrote it on, in fact, it is me playing it on the piano on the record. We called it the hymn back then. I don't think I called it that. I think the others thought it had a sort of hymn-like quality. I don't know if that was derogatory or not. But it became known as the hymn, and it's been sitting around waiting to leap out for all these years. A guy who plays clarinet and saxophone called Gilad Atzmon, who's done a lot of stuff with Robert Wyatt, amongst other people, and he played sort of rather Eastern-sounding clarinet during the verse pieces, and a lovely saxophone solo on one of them, which tipped it over into having a bit more of an Eastern sound. Yeah, it's a lovely piece, isn't it?
Yeah, I get an image of pale British Olympic athletes running on a beach when I,
God, you,
I listen to it.
You need to see a shrink.
I think one of these major movie directors is gonna co-opt that piece, so I hope you're prepared for it. You wrote it for a movie that hasn't been made yet.
Yep, that applies to more than one piece on this album, I think.
Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason. Was the Division Bell ever intended by you, Rick, or Dave to be Pink Floyd's final album?
No, I think for me, I've never been interested in declaring anything to be the last of anything. Something like a band has a life which is entirely reliant on everyone wanting to do it. You know, all the principals wanting to do it. And if David doesn't want to do it anymore, then it probably won't happen. But I'd rather than declare anything being the last or the end of or whatever, or the farewell tour, it's not in my nature. You know, I've always said that I think it might well be that there'll be no more tours, no more records or whatever, but I'd certainly would always like to feel that there was the option to do something, for instance, enormously worthy, the equivalent of another Live 8 or something like that. That one wouldn't shut every door on the possibility of doing something for the right reasons.
So then, is it fair to say that are you satisfied that Louder Than Words and all of the very emotional music on The Endless River, are you satisfied for it to serve as Pink Floyd's coda to your life's work?
If that's how it is, that's how it is. I'm not going to sit in my rocking chair moaning and burbling about the fact that it's an unsuitable ending. No, it'll do fine. If that's where we end up, that's where we end up. That's fine.
Wonderful. Now, help me with this. There is a really inventive kind of a medley. To first of all, what's the translation?
Allons-y is French for let's go. Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
It's very, very common usage in France. Anytime anyone wants to go down the pub or do anything, it's allons-y. piece of music recorded by Rick on the afternoon of a show that we did at the Royal Albert Hall in London in late summer of 1968. And Rick had loved the sound of this huge pipe organ in the Royal Albert Hall and asked permission to play it. And so he did, and we had obviously, I don't remember this of course, stuck up a couple of microphones and a tape machine and recorded what he did. And that piece of tape got put away in a box in a cupboard somewhere in our tape store and has resurfaced. It's the only piece on this album, The Endless River, that's not recorded in that 1993 period. It's actually recorded in 1968.
Containing the late Rick Wright on the Albert Hall's massive pipe organ in autumn 1968. Still to come, one of the greatest minds since Einstein, who cannot speak, implores us all to keep talking. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net with David Gilmour and Nick Mason floating down The Endless River by Pink Floyd.
Hi, this is Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're floating down the endless river with Redbeard.
Hi, this is David Gilmour, and I'm here with Redbeard, helping him to introduce you all to our new album, The Endless River.
Thank you, guys. It's an honor and a pleasure indeed. Long ago, the British graphics team called Hypnosis, with Storm Thorgerson and Aubrey Powell, affectionately nicknamed Poe, they created breathtaking album cover art for Pink Floyd that has reached iconic status. Sadly, Storm Thorgerson passed away in April 2013. Besides losing a great friend of the band, Thorgerson's passing created yet another creative challenge to navigate for Pink Floyd's Endless River, according to David Gilmour.
The artwork for this record was a problem, of course, because Storm is another person who's died much more recently than Rick, in fact. So it's very hard to work out how we're going to keep that sort of artistic continuity. I thought the best thing to do would be to go back to Poe, who was Storm's partner in Hypnosis for most of our career, who had had a falling out with him a number of years ago, but they had become close friends again more recently, and I thought I would get Poe to take the reins and look for and commission pieces of art. And it was quite a slow and tricky process in which I saw a lot of things, and both Nick and myself saw a lot of pieces of artwork and weren't thrilled, until one day they found on the website of a 17 or 18 year old Egyptian boy called Ahmed Emad Eldin, they saw this image of a guy poling a boat across the clouds, and both Nick and I immediately saw that and thought, that is just right.
Thank you.
the communication of ideas, enabling human beings to work together, to build the impossible. Mankind's greatest achievements have come about by culture. Our greatest hopes could become reality in the future. With the technology at our disposal, the possibilities are unbounded.
And then Talkin' Hawkin, there's that sound again that you and I talked about 20 years ago that blew me away 20 years ago. Could you just give a thumbnail sketch of what's that sound? Who's Talkin' Hawkin?
Well, Stephen Hawking is the guy who wrote he's written all sorts of books about science.
Brief History of Time.
Yeah, Brief History of Time and all sorts of other stuff. He's it's the same recording. It comes from the same recording of him. It's not his own voice, of course. It's actually a synthesized voice because he can't speak. And it was used originally in England for an advertisement for the National Telephone Company. And we asked permission to use it, and we used it on the division bell. But we only used a little bit of it on Keep Talking. Polly, my wife, Polly Samson, you know, is now main Pink Floyd lyricist, said, what happened to that piece of tape? Could we try using the bits you didn't use last time?
Great idea.
So we dug it out and found there was lots of stuff on it, very lovely, meaningful stuff. It all, you know, these things happen strangely and serendipitously.
The irony of a man, a brilliant soul who cannot speak, imploring us to keep talking, to keep engaging, not just communicating, but to keep talking. It means more now than it did 20 years ago.
It's a subject that really never goes out of fashion. It's more necessary right now than it has been for a very long time in this world we're living in currently.
Where does that line, that term come, the endless river?
The endless river is the last phrase but one on High Hopes, on the division bell. You know, the endless river forever and ever are the last two phrases. It encapsulates a sort of an ongoing flow of music that comes from us, the way that we've done it before and the way that we have done it still some time ago, but more recently. Summing up of what we were going for on this record. The flow that music can create, that can reverberate on forever and ever.
To where does the endless river flow? And are you confident that it is indeed endless?
Maybe it's circular.
What gives you that assurance?
It's a guess. It's a guess. We'll find out. Maybe.
It was very clear in 2011 when you did the magnificent catalog reissues. Mm. The shadow of grief and loss was still very, very much evident. You were still in that grieving period. Is timing everything? Is there a component here of time passing so that everybody in the Pink Floyd family, in the creative Pink Floyd family, can focus on, you know, the celebration of what you have to work with rather than how much you've lost?
That was one of the reasons why we looked back at this stuff, one of the many reasons why we were looking at this stuff. You know, Rick has died. That moment, you know, that those moments that we have shared can't happen again. So that was another good reason for looking at this material again and seeing what we had, seeing what we could put out, and to remind ourselves of what a great part of it all Rick had been. Very sad for us that in our selfish way, we won't have him to work with again.
In 2011, when asked how you felt about The Division Bell being the final bookend in the Pink Floyd saga, you told me that you had just listened to High Hopes on the drive into the boat that morning and that you were quite happy to have The Division Bell as the last word, so to speak. So let me update the question.
This music, was a piece of unfinished business, but it seemed important that we went into, looked at, and put out for all those fans who've been asking the question, whatever happened to that music that was left over from The Division Bell? were we ever going to release it? And I had become a little less precious about perfectionism and was willing to put out something that we couldn't get to the sort of sonic purity that we were had been known for, you could say. And this is something a little bit more immediate. The wonders of the modern recording process are legion. You know, there's many, many things that we just, you know, we could not have made this record the way it is 20 years ago. It would have been impossible. And now you can do stuff that you just wouldn't have believed you could do back then. And we use all that stuff to the best of our ability. I'm very happy to be releasing this material now, this music that it would seem incomplete to me if we didn't put something out. It's not intended to be, you know, a Dark Side of the Moon or a Division Bell. It's a different sort of piece of music that seems appropriate at this time.
David Gilmour's lap steel guitar swooping and soaring like an electric seagull high above Pink Floyd's The Endless River. That's called Surfacing. Still to come, Pink Floyd co-founder Nick Mason explains why that, for a musician and composer, there is no substitute for floating into uncharted new waters. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net with David Gilmour and Nick Mason, floating down the endless river with Pink Floyd.
Hi, this is Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're floating down the endless river with Redbeard.
Hi, this is David Gilmour, and I'm here with Redbeard, helping him to introduce you all to our new album, The Endless River.
Tell me about the stunning cover photo and graphic for The Endless River.
The saddest thing was we lost Storm a couple of years ago. And without Storm, we were sort of, I won't say floundering, but really not quite sure which way to go. And then Poe reappeared, who was Storm's original partner in hypnosis. And it was so good to actually have some sort of continuity when we came to talking about what we should do for an image. I mean, it's pretty weird that we spend so much time now talking about the image, because it's still really important to us, even though a lot of people who are going to listen to this music will maybe never see it, because they'll be downloading or streaming or whatever. But it's still, it is for us, it's an integral part of the package. Poe was instrumental in getting a lot of people to come in and make some suggestions. And I have to say, we had a lot of really remarkable and wonderful images that were turned up by different people. But there was a sort of element almost of a Dark Side moment when I saw this particular picture. It hadn't come from any of we had some sort of serious artists and photographers who made submissions of material. And this is from an 18-year-old Egyptian boy who none of us have ever met, who just sent in something very close to this to the actual image that we're using. We've modified it very slightly, or got him to modify it very slightly, in terms of a little bit of detail on the boat. But it's one of those things where nothing, for me anyway, nothing came close in terms of fitting the bill for being the right picture for the music.
I just love that story.
Someone or something to show you the way.
The late Rick Wright trading vocals with David Gilmour on Time from one of the most important albums of the 20th century, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Here's Nick Mason.
I must say, you sound terrific. Everything about you, your energy and everything, is significantly different than 3 years ago when last you and I talked in 2011 about the rollout of the catalog. It's clear now that you were still suffering from grief and focused on what you'd lost.
Oh, interesting. That may be true. I think there's something else. First of all, I'd say that I really enjoyed the promotion of that sort of the Discovery editions and that sort of revisiting of old material. But there is no substitute for talking about something new. And I think there's a sort of enthusiasm that really, it's only in this, as I say, it's really quite recent that we've actually realized that we've got an album on our hands rather than some material that we need something to do with. And I think one gets revitalized by that enormously, the fact that it's actually something that is new.
To where does the Endless River flow?
A couple of things. First of all, I just think it fits really nicely with the style and the feel of the music. I think it's an inspired title. We worked our way, as usual, through a number of other options. And I think for me, both the image and the title fit probably better than some of the, well, certainly than the last few albums. Yeah, where does it flow? Who knows? There's a nice sort of imponderable element to it, which I always like. I like that abstraction.
Grammy Award winner for 1994, Maroon, from the previous Pink Floyd album, The Division Bell, which shares the same musical DNA as this new effort, The Endless River. Our riverboat captain, David Gilmour, returns in a moment, and it's going to get loud. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net, floating to the mouth of The Endless River by Pink Floyd.
Hi, this is Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're floating down the endless river with Redbeard.
Hi, this is David Gilmour, and I'm here with Redbeard, helping him to introduce you all to our new album, The Endless River.
You know, when we first hear Louder Than Words, I think all of us Pink Floyd fans in your circle of supporters, I think immediately it's like, oh, this thing that we do. He's talking about the band. He's talking about the years, the whole enchilada. But the more I've listened to Louder Than Words, this thing that we do, I'm not taking it so literally. What is the thing?
Well,
who is we?
And
what is done?
The whole story really is that Polly Sampson, who is a writer and who is the sort of primary lyricist on The Division Bell, and who also happens to be married to me, I asked her if she wanted to help and write some lyrics for this record. And she came up with this, she wrote this piece of these words as a poem. She didn't write them specifically for that piece of music. She wrote them, and it's about a strange sort of semi-dysfunctional relationship that we in the band have as people, and that we aren't too good at communicating with each other verbally. It struck her that that we communicated perfectly when we played together, and we suddenly transform into a different sort of thing, a different sort of unit, when we actually do this thing that we do. So it is about us. It's very specifically about us and our relationship to each other and how that changes when we make music together.
I find that louder than words, this thing that we do, I find it very poetic and very open-ended and a lot broader than maybe the first listen through
is the wonderful thing about a good lyric, that it can have many layers of meaning to it that you only can sift through and get to with repeated listenings over a period of time.
I'm Red Beard from InTheStudio.net. We'll thank the crew of our ship for the musical trip down the endless river next. Don't go away. I'm Redbeard from InTheStudio.net, thanking the crew who made this journey down the endless river possible. From Columbia Records, Greg Lynn, Mike DePippa, Lisa Sonkin, Jim Burris, Gina Rahon, and Patrick Karnick. From 115 Management, Paul Osby and Andy Murray. From Astoria, engineer Damon Iddens on Das Boot. From Classics du Jour, Paul Rappaport and Judy LeBeau. From MX2 Media, Mike Parrish and Mike Bacon. From Bearded Fish Productions, Mark Fisher. And most of all, we want to thank Nick Mason and David Gilmore. Godspeed down the endless river.